Welcome to Zichru Daf Siman Monday. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldhar, and today we're Masechet Shabbos, Daf Nun Gimel. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, there's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding what one can place on an animal on Shabbos. Rav holds that one may place a feed bag, a troskel, on an animal, which is for its pleasure, since it won't need to bend down to get food. And all the more so, one can place a saddle cloth, a mardas, on it to keep it warm and alleviate its suffering from the cold. These items are not considered a masui for the animal, a burden for the animal, and therefore, the animal is not considered as if it's doing an action of hotzah. Shmuel holds that only the saddlecloth is permitted in order to alleviate the suffering, but the fee bag is prohibited since it's only there to provide comfort, and therefore it is considered a masui, a burden for the animal, and it would be doing hotzah. Point number two, the Gemara introduces a contradiction between a braisa which states that an animal may not go out wearing a kameya, an amulet, even if it has proven effective, and a mishnah which states that a person may not go out with a kameya that has not proven effective, implying that one may go out with a kameya that has proven effective. The Gemara answers that the braisa is referring to a kameya that has proven effective for people, but has not proven effective for animals. The Gemara clarifies that since a person has mazel, which Rashi explains to mean a malach, an angel, he's assisted in being healed. The animal lacks mazel, lacks a malach, and therefore it doesn't get that extra assistance, and therefore the kameya may not be effective for the animal. And point number three, the Gemara relates a miracle that occurred to a poor man who did not have enough money to hire a wet nurse after his wife had passed away. So miraculously, his breast opened and he was able to nurse his son. So Rav Yosef said the man must have been great to have such a miracle performed for him. Abai said that on the contrary, the man must have been inferior, for the natural order was changed on his behalf. And Rashi explains that this man did not have the schutz, did not have the merit to have the shari sachar, the gates of income, opened for him. Rav Yehuda said that one can learn from this incident how difficult it is to provide a person sustenance, for instead the poor man's sustenance being provided, the natural order was changed on his behalf. And Rav Nachman supported Rav Yehuda's observation by pointing out that miracles happen to save people's lives, but food is rarely created. So once again, the 3 points are: number one, there's machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding what one can place on an animal on Shabbos. Rav holds one may place a feed bag, a troskel, on an animal, which is for its pleasure, since it won't need to bend down to get food. And all the more so, one can place a saddle cloth, a mardas, on it to keep it warm and alleviate its suffering from the cold. These items are not considered a masui for the animal, a burden for the animal, and therefore the animals are not doing an act of hotzah. Shmuel holds that only the saddle cloth is permitted in order to alleviate the suffering, but the fee bag is prohibited since it's only there to provide comfort, and therefore it is considered a masui, it is considered a burden. Point number two, the Gemara introduces a contradiction between a braisa, which states that an animal may not go out wearing a kameya, an amulet, even if it has proven effective, and a mishnah which states that a person may not go out with a kameya that has not proven effective, implying that one may go out with a kameya that has proven effective. So the Gemara answers that the braisa is referring to a kameya that has proven effective for people, but has not been proven effective for animals. The Gemara clarifies that since a person has mazel, which Rashi explains to mean a malach, an angel, he is assisted in being healed. The animal lacks mazel, it doesn't have a malach, and therefore it doesn't get the extra assistance, and therefore the kameya may not be effective. And point number three, the Gemara relates a miracle that occurred to a poor man who did not have enough money to hire a wet nurse after his wife passed away. Miraculously, his breast opened and he was able to nurse his son. So Rav Yosef said the man must have been great to have such a miracle performed for him. Rabbi said that on the contrary, the man must have been inferior, for the natural order was changed on his behalf. Rashi explains that this man did not have the schus, he did not have the merit to have the shari sechar, the gates of income, open for him. Rav Yehuda said that one can learn from this incident how difficult it is to provide a person's sustenance, for instead of the poor man's sustenance being provided, the natural order was changed on his behalf. And Rav Nachman supported Rav Yehuda's observation by pointing out that miracles happen to save people's lives, but food is rarely created. All right, so now we go to our simon. So the simon for Nun Gimel is a Nigerian prince. So here goes. The Nigerian prince rode through the village on his horse with the fancy feeding bag and saddlecloth, passing out kameyas for people and their animals, and golden coins to the man who needed a wet nurse for his son. Once again in slow motion. The Nigerian prince, that means we're on Daf Nun Gimel. The Nigerian prince rode through the village on his horse with a fancy feeding bag and saddlecloth, which reminds us there's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding what one can place on an animal on Shabbos. Rav holds that one may place a feed bag, a troskel, on an animal, which is for its pleasure since it won't need to bend down to get food, and all the more so one may place a saddlecloth, a mardas, on it to keep it warm and alleviate its suffering from the cold. These items are not considered a masui for the animal, and therefore the animal is not doing an action of hotzah. Shmuel holds that only the saddlecloth is permitted in order to alleviate the suffering, but the feedback is prohibited since it's only there to provide comfort, and therefore it is considered a masui, a burden. So the Nigerian prince rode through the village on his horse with a fancy feeding bag and sackcloth, passing out kamehs for people and their animals. Which reminds us, the Gemara introduces the contradiction between a braisa which states that an animal may not go out wearing a kameha, an amulet, even if it has proven effective, and a mishnah which states that a person may not go out with a kameha that has not proven effective, implying that one may go out with a kameha that has proven effective. So the Gemara answers that the braisa is referring to a kameha that has proven effective for people, but has not proven effective for animals. The Gemara clarifies that since a person has mazel, which Rashi explains to mean a malach, an angel, he is assisted in being healed. The animal lacks mazel, lacks a malach, and therefore it doesn't get the extra assistance, and therefore the kameha may not be effective. So the Nigerian prince rode through the village on his horse with a fancy feeding bag and saddle cloth, passing out kamehs for people and their animals, and golden coins to the man who needed a wet nurse for his son. Which reminds us, the Gemara relates a miracle that occurred to a poor man who did not have enough money to hire a wet nurse after his wife had passed away. Miraculously, his breasts opened and he was able to nurse his son. So Rav Yosef said the man must have been great to have such a miracle performed for him. Abaya said, to the contrary, the man must have been inferior, for the natural order was changed on his behalf. Rashi explains that this man did not have the merit to have the shari schar, the gates of income, open for him. Rav Yehuda said that one can learn from this incident how difficult it is to provide a person sustenance, for instead of the poor man's sustenance being provided, the natural order was changed on his behalf. Rav Nachman supported Rav Yehuda's observation by pointing out that miracles happen to save people's lives, but food is rarely created. So once again, the Nigerian prince rode through the village on his horse with his fancy feeding bag and saddle cloth, passing out kamehs for people and animals, and golden coins to the man who needed a wet nurse for his son. All right, so now it's time for our four blah bah chazara. Daf mem tes. So the simon for mem tes is meat, and we use a butcher. So here goes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher. Butcher, that means we're on daf mem tes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher wearing tefillin, which reminds us, Rabbi Yannai said that tefillin required the one who wears it to have a guf naki, a clean body, like the standards of Elisha Baal Kanafim, the winged one. He was called Elisha Baal Kanafim because of the miracle that occurred when he was chased by a Roman officer during the times when one caught wearing tefillin would have his brain gouged out. Elisha took off his tefillin and covered them with his hands, and when asked what was in his hands, Elisha responded that he was holding dove wings. A miracle occurred and dove wings appeared. Elisha chose dove wings specifically because the Jewish people are likened to a dove in that just as dove wings protect the bird, the mitzvahs we perform protect us. So winged doves flew over the holy butcher wearing tefillin, who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides, which reminds us in the next Mishnah stated that one may insulate with animal hides, shlachin, on Erev Shabbos, and whether having insulated with them or not, one may move them on Shabbos. Rav Yonas and Ben Elazar said that it seems logical that the Mishnah is referring to the hides of a Baal Bais, literally a homeowner, one who has no plans to sell his hides, who doesn't care if they get dirty, and therefore they're considered fit for sitting on it, and they are not muksa. However, those belonging to an uman, literally a craftsman, one who plans on selling his hides, are muksa, since the craftsman plans on selling them, and therefore he does care about getting them dirty, and because of that, they're not considered fit for sitting on, and therefore they are muksa. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said that Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, would say that his father was a professional tanner, and he would have his hides brought out to sit on. So we see from this that even a tanner, one who plans on selling his hides, is not particular about people sitting on his hides. So winged doves were the holy butcher wearing tefillin, who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides so he could teach them about the 39 malachas. Which reminds us, the Gemara introduces a discussion regarding what the 39 malachas of Shabbos correspond to. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said, the malachas are connected to avodas of Mishkan. They correspond to the labors needed to build the Mishkan. Rabbi Yonas and Rabbi Elazar said they correspond to the 39 times the words malacha, malachto, and malachas appear in the Torah. Daf Nun. So the symbol for Daf Nun is a nincompoop, a silly, foolish person. Here goes. The nincompoop. Nincompoop, that means we're on Daf Nun. The nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation, which reminds us, the Mishnah stated that one may insulate with gizei tzemer, with wood shearings, but they cannot be moved. Rashi explains that wool shearings are typically reserved to be made into thread, and therefore they're muksa. It was said in the name of Rebbe that the wool shearings are not permitted to be moved if they were not dedicated to being used for insulation. But if they were dedicated for use as insulation, they'd no longer be deemed muksa, and one would be permitted to move them. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches, which reminds us, there's a three-way machlokas amarim regarding one who harvested charoyo shedekel, hardened date palm branches for firewood, which are muksa, and then change his mind and decide to use them for sitting on, which is a non-muksa designation. So what's required to release the branches from their muksa status prior to Shabbos? Rav says Koshi must tie them into bundles. Intent alone is not enough. Shmuel says Choshev, he must intend to sit upon them. He doesn't require physical action. Ravasi says Yoshev, he sits on them Erev Shabbos, even though he doesn't tie them or consciously intend to sit on them on Shabbos. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches and fell into a batch of sweet-smelling barda. Which reminds us that Mamre Mar Zutra and Ravashi were sitting together one Shabbos and were brought barda, a mixture containing one-third aloes, one-third myrtle, and one-third violets. A Mamre and Ravashi washed with it, but Mar Zutra did not. Rav Mordechai explained that Mar Zutra holds that even during the week one's not permitted to wash with it, since he agrees with what was taught in a brisa, that man may scrape crusts of filth and crusts of a wound because of discomfort, but is forbidden to do so if it's to beautify himself. Rashi explains that he would be transgressing the prohibition of lo yulbash ish simlas isha, a man should not wear a feminine garment. A Maimon and Ravashi washed with it because they held what was taught in a brisa, that a person should wash his face, hands, and feet each day in honor of his creator. And Rashi explains the brisa means that it's an honor to one's creator due to the fact that a person was created in Hashem's image. Furthermore, one who sees beautiful creatures will come to bless Hashem. Daf Ninov. So the Simfer Ninov is a gnawing beaver, which connects us to a beaver pelt hat. So that's our Simon, a beaver pelt hat. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, that means we're on Daf Ninov. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo, insulating their cold food, which reminds us, when it was reported that Shmuel ruled that one may insulate something cold on Shabbos to keep it cold, Rav Yosef wanted to know why Shmuel needed to teach this when the Mishnah stated very clearly that it was permitted. So Abaya answered that without Shmuel, one might have thought that the Mishnah only permitted insulating cold water, which is not usually heated up through placing it under a pillow, and therefore there is no concern that one would heat up water in this fashion, thereby violating the prohibition of Hatmana. Food, however, which is normally covered by a pillow in order to warm up, would be prohibited to insulate to keep cold, lest one come to insulate it to warm up. So Shmuel's coming to teach that it's permitted to insulate even cold foods as well. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, which reminds us, a brisa states that one may not crush snow or hail on Shabbos in order to make it into a liquid. It is permitted, however, to place them into a cup or bowl of liquid. Rashi explains that the Rabbanim forbade crushing the snow or hail into water, because one is creating something new, it's noad, and therefore it has the appearance of a malacha. However, placing them into a cup of wine, as an example, in order to cool the wine in the summer, or into a bowl, is not a problem though, since the snow and hail melt on their own, and not as a result of one's direct actions. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and in melting ice in their drinks, while their arctic camels stood outside in their excessive restraints. Which reminds us, the first mission in the fifth parak states that it is permitted to let one's camel go out into Rosh Hashanah wearing a halter, an afsar, and a female dromedary wearing a nose ring, a chotem, and it's not considered that the animal is doing the malach of a hotzah. The reason for this is that since they both serve to restrain the animal, they're not considered a burden, they're not considered a masui, which would be prohibited to carry, but rather as clothes. Rebbe was asked what the case would be if the restraints were switched, meaning if a camel may wear a nose ring and a female dromedary may wear a halter. Rebbe responded that it's obvious that the female dromedary cannot go out with the halter, with the afsar, since it is a feistier animal, and the halter, the afsar, will not restrain it. Therefore, the halter would be considered a burden. Rebbe said the only question is regarding the nose ring, the chotem, for the camel, which is considered an excessive restraint for it. On the one hand, since it's an excessive restraint, it's not necessary, and therefore maybe it's considered a burden. Or, perhaps we don't say an excessive restraint is considered a burden. And this discussion continues on Daf Nun Beis. Daf Nun Beis. So the Simfer Nun Beis is a newbie to Yiddishkeit. So here goes. The newbie to Yiddishkeit, newbie, that means we're on Daf Nun Beis. The newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the How to Transport a Paraduma on a Leash video, which reminds us, Rav holds that an excessive restraint is considered a burden and is therefore prohibited for an animal to be restrained with it on Shabbos due to the prohibition of Hotzah. So this was challenged from a brisa that stated that if the owner of a Paraduma tied a leash to it, the Paraduma is still valid. Now, a leash is considered an excessive restraint for a Paraduma, and if an excessive restraint is considered a burden, then it should disqualify the Paraduma, which is not permitted to carry burdens. Three Amoraim defended Rav, explaining that in this case, the extra restraint was necessary, and therefore it was not considered excessive to be classified as a burden. Abai said the Braisa was referring to a cow that was being transported to a different city, and therefore it required extra restraint so that it would not turn back. Rav explained that since the parduma is so rare and priceless, it needs to be guarded with extra care. And Ravina said that Bryce was referring to a rebellious cow, which required extra restraint. So the newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the how to transport a parduma on a leash video, until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal collars, which reminds us the Mishnah stated that one may sprinkle mechatas, the ash water of the parduma, upon a collar of an animal, or immerse the collar in a mikveh even while it's on the animal's neck. This seems to contradict the Mishnah in Kehilim that states that a ring of an animal is not capable of becoming tameh. So Rabbi Yitzchak answered that the collar was initially noy adam, a person's adornment, which then was transferred to become noy behema, an animal adornment. And Rashi explains that the ring became tameh while it was still a person's adornment. Rabbi Yosef explained that since a person pulls an animal at the collar, it's classified as a human utensil, not an animal utensil. So the newbie to Yiddishkeit was enjoying the how to transport a parduma on a leash video, until the more esoteric parts about purifying animal collars and vessels losing their ability to become tameh through destructive physical changes. Which reminds us, a mishnah from Kalim was brought that taught that all kalim, all utensils, become susceptible to contract tuma through machshava, through thought, if the craftsman decides he'll use it without adding more to it. But they do not lose their capacity to contract tuma, to be makabel tuma, unless there was a shinui emaisa, a physical change. Rabbi Yehuda taught in a bright that when the Tana of the Mishnah said it loses its capacity to be makabel tuma through a maisa, through an action, he was only referring to a maisa that brought about a destructive physical change. All right, now it's time for the pop quiz of 10 questions, plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here we go. Number 1. Which daf do we learn how to make branches, hard branches, not muksa? That's on daf Nun. Good. Number 2. Where do we learn that vessels can lose their ability to be makabel tuma through a destructive action that was done to it? That's on daf Nun Beis. Great. Number 3. Where do we have the machlokes regarding animals using feeding bags on Shabbos? That's on daf Nun Gimel. Good. Which daf do we have Rebbe asked if an excessive restraint is considered a burden for an animal? That's on daf Nun Aleph. Great. Number 5. Where do we have the question whether a leash for a paraduma is considered a burden, a masui? That's on daf Nun Beis. Good. Number 6. Where do we have the machlokes regarding a small menorah with grooves? That's on daf Mem Vav. Excellent. Number 7. Where do we have the question whether one can use hides or bring out hides, shlachim, to sit on Shabbos? That's on daf Mem Tes. Good. Number 8. Where do we have the miracle that occurred for the man who needed to nurse his son? That's on daf Nun Gimel. Great. Number 9. Where do we learn about Toldos Achama? That's on daf Lamates. Good. And finally, number 10. Where do we learn that one can definitely insulate cold food, not just cold water, on Shabbos? That's on daf Nun Aleph. Great. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions of Maseches Brachos. Number 1. Which daf do we learn about the concept of a Beinoni? That's on daf Samachov. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we learn the source for a zimun? That's on daf Memhei. And number 3. Where do we learn what the brachas in the Shemona Esrei of Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, and Tainus correspond to? That's on daf Chavtes. Excellent. All right. That concludes our pop quiz and the 3 bonus questions with Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avram Gold from Zichu, wishing you a great day and great learning.